Today, is this time really different as equities fall hard? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analysis, one of those posts covering finance and property news. This is our weekly market update where we start in the US, go across to Europe, Asia, and then in Australia, and also cover crypto and commodities in passing. And we're now deep into uncertain territory as the thesis this time is different is being tested by reality, and for now, reality is winning. Investors are running from one side of the boat, hopefully not the Titanic, to the other, as a fear of recession iceberg looms for investors still leveraged to the gunnels in AI tech, and they're hopelessly wrongly positioned for such an event. I can show you thousands of reports claiming that this time is different, plenty suggesting the long inverted bond yield curve had lost its power to predict a recession, plenty arguing extreme share market concentration was no big worry, plenty arguing that the mini bubble in artificial intelligence was nothing like what we saw in the dot-com era. But now, as expected, all of those beliefs are being challenged by a perfect storm of market fears, with fears of a negative pulse through the industrial world from a stuttering Chinese economy, which has been building for some weeks, even though, of course, talk of broad recession may still seem far-fetched when the real-time US GDP estimates are still tracking growth of 2.5%. Just remember that the path towards bringing down inflation without hurting the jobs market will always be very narrow, and the potential for the Fed or other central banks, for that matter, to leave rates too high for too long was always there. And now those fears are suddenly front of mind. Recent results are spotlighting a weaker consumer as many sectors lose pricing power, and AI investments aren't paying yet. True, skepticism about the AI boom has been building for weeks, and it reached a crescendo following a set of June quarter profit results from big tech firms that can best be described as, well, middling. While there was nothing really wrong with the earnings numbers, the size of the capital investments at companies like Microsoft and Amazon, running at about $140 billion US a year for just two companies, has raised justified doubts about future returns on that spend, especially when Nvidia is the main recipient, while Intel is not. That tech sell-off has been compounded by the long-expected decision from the Bank of Japan to finally raise interest rates, which forced the yen higher against the US dollar and helped unwind one of the world's most popular carry trades. That means where investors borrow in a low-interest rate currency, like the yen, and invest the proceeds in higher-yielding assets around the world. A Bank of Japan hike was always going to create volatility, but it's arrived at precisely the wrong time. That is, just as a recession panic rocks Wall Street. The political backdrop this month is another big consideration for US markets. Whatever is driving trading patterns, it's no longer the so-called Trump trade. After a wave of opinion polls shows enthusiasm for Vice President Kamala Harris's bid for the White House, betting markets now put her chance of winning as higher than that of Republican challenger Donald Trump for the first time. The bottom line is that the election is still competitive. Equities, corporate credit, and cyclical sectors will fall until policy uncertainty is reduced, according to BCA research. A series of ugly data points also inflamed investors' recession fears. There was the weaker-than-expected data on jobs openings and a manufacturing activity gauge that showed US factories are going backwards, with data showing that US manufacturing activity contracted at the fastest pace in 8 months back in July. And then US non-farm payroll data showed the US economy added just 114,000 jobs in July compared to expectations for 170,000 jobs, while the unemployment rate rose from 4.1% to 4.3%, although rounded it was really 4.2-something. The question is, did Hurricane Beryl, which knocked out power in Texas and slammed parts of Louisiana during the payroll survey week, contribute to the below-expectations payroll gain? Notably, June's labour market data was also revised down. Downward revisions have now occurred 6 out of the last 7 months. So we are close to the possible triggering of the so-called SARM rule, which maps the pace of a rising US jobless rate against the onset of recession, triggered not quite because we're only at 4.2 something. And investors were so convinced about the AI story, the soft landing and earnings growth, that we end up with a market where valuations got too expensive, particularly compared to the returns on offer from bonds, and volatility was too low. They'd forgotten that markets typically fall when rates go down. That's happened since the 1970s. The S&P 500 has typically fallen by 23% on average in the first 200 days or so following the first rate cut. So all up, the stunning change in sentiment was summed up perfectly by the bond market, which is now ascribing an 80% chance that the Fed will cut rates by 0.5% in September. A week ago, it was just 12%, and incredibly, there's even talk that the central bank may have to hold an emergency meeting and cut rates outside of the usual cycle. Of course, they're off over the summer. So the rally we saw on Wall Street after Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell strongly hinted at a December rate cut now seems a distant memory after just 2 days of selling. The S&P 500 ended 1.84% lower on the day and 3.44% down across the week. Nasdaq Composite closed down 2.43% and 3.35% across the week, putting it on track into correction territory as it extended recent declines to fall 10% below its record high. The Nasdaq is still actually up 11.8% year to date. The S&P 500, which has lost about 6% from its high, is still up 12.1% for the year. The Dow dropped 1.51% and 2.1% across the week, while the Russell 2000 was down 3.54% on Friday and 6.82% for the week, so maybe on rotation. The US 10-year bond yield fell to 3.792%. That's below 4% for the first time since last December. The 5, 7, and 10-year Treasury yields have all plunged below 4% since the Federal Reserve signaled on Wednesday that its first interest rate cut was coming. The 2-year was at 3.874, so the inversion is closing. Traders are now pricing in a 71% probability that the Fed will cut by 50 basis points in September, up from 31% before the data was released, and 22% from Thursday. The VIX volatility index hit its highest point since March 2023 at 23.39. Last time it hit highs was when the US banking crisis was in full swing. September and October, by the way, tend to be a volatile month for US shares, and the VIX averages around 21.8 in October, the highest of any month. That's according to recent data that I saw. While Apple held the line after its post-bell results beat estimates, Amazon dived more than 8% after its update. And although Meta rallied on Thursday, poor results from Qualcomm and Arm saw their shares, and many of the big chip makers swoon again. Intel dropped about 20% on its miss, dividend suspension and job cuts in what could be its worst day since the 2000 dot-com bubble burst. After a 7% loss on Thursday and a wild, volatile week, AI darling Nvidia lost more traction on Friday following media reports that the US government is launching an antitrust probe into the company following complaints from rival chip makers. And elsewhere, Snap dropped 9.36% on Friday. The dollar index was down 1.1% at 103.22 and got as low as 103.12. That's the lowest since March the 14th. And it's the largest one-day percentage drop since November. The greenback weakened 1.84% to 146.54 Japanese yen. Actually got as low as 146.42, the lowest since February the 2nd. The yen has gained since hitting a 38-year low 161.96 against the dollar on July the 3rd, boosted by interventions from the Japanese authorities and traders unwinding those carry trades. It got an extra lift on Wednesday when the Bank of Japan hiked rates to 0.25%. That's the highest since 2008. Crude oil prices fell on Friday on mounting concerns over slowing economic growth, despite the funeral of the Hamas leader in Qatar following his assassination 2 days ago in Iran's capital, Tehran, which investors are worrying may lead to a widening conflict in the Middle East. OPEC Plus, by the way, made no changes to its production policies after an online meeting on Thursday, reiterating that it could pause plans to increase output from October. The US crude futures WTI fell 2.17% to $74.15 a barrel, while the Brent contract fell 1.95% to $77.42 a barrel. Both benchmarks have declined around 11% over the past 4 weeks, as disappointing economic data from top oil importer China and surveys showing weaker manufacturing activity across Asia, Europe, and the US raise concerns of weak global economic growth, weighing on oil consumption. Gulf futures were last at $2,486.35 US, up 0.21% on the day and up 3.39% on the week. Silver futures were also up 0.73% on the day to $28.68, but were down 6.41% over the month. Europe's Stoxx 600 index fell 2.73% to 497.86 points, hitting an over 3-month low. Most European sub-indices traded lower as well, with the technology sector falling 6.1%, its biggest one-day decline since October 2020, tracking the sell-off on Wall Street. A Stoxx fear gauge also hit an over one-year high of 24.52 points. The financial sector lost 5.2%, while banks shed 4.3%, extending declines from the previous session, when the sector was hit by downbeat earnings and the prospect of global monetary policy easing. The dollar weakened 1.58% to 0.8575 Swiss francs as Switzerland's annual inflation rate held steady at 1.3% in July, in line with expectations, and encouraged bets the central bank could lower borrowing costs again next month. The euro gained 1.12% to 1.0908 and reached 1.0927, the highest since July the 18th. Sterling strengthened 0.51% to 1.2798, bouncing back from a one-month low after the Bank of England on Thursday cut interest rates from a 16-year high. As I reported, the Bank of England cut its interest rates after a tight vote from its policymakers, who were split over whether inflation pressures had eased sufficiently. This is similar to the hawkish cut we got from the European Central Bank back in June, and look what happened to that. Britain's blue-chip FTSE 100 closed 1% lower, shrugging off initial gains, with HSBC sliding 6.5%. The FTSE index, despite recent underperformance relative to global peers, is expected to stage a significant comeback. That's according to UBS. Analysts are projecting a bullish trajectory for the index, targeting a level of 9,000 by the close of 2024. While acknowledging the historical underperformance of the UK equity markets, UBS emphasises the past performance is not a guarantee of future returns. UBS contends that the current environment presents a unique combination of factors favouring the FTSE 100, including attractive valuations, a potential shift in monetary policy, and a recovering economy. Germany's benchmark index, though, slipped 2.3%, with BMW dropping 3.1% after the automaker reported a lower-than-expected profit margin in its core automotive businesses during the second quarter. Among other notable stock moves, Rolls-Royce surged 7% after the British aero engine maker said it would pay a dividend for the first time since the pandemic and raise its 2024 profit and cash flow forecasts. But Worldline tumbled 15.3%, hitting an all-time low after the French payment technology group cut its 2024 outlook, citing a sharp decline in consumption trends across Europe and uncertainty about a potential recovery. On the economic data front, Eurozone manufacturing activity remained mired in contraction in July. The PMI held at June's 45.8 in July, and Germany's manufacturing sector continued its downturn, falling to 43.2 in July from 43.5 in June. And this week's highlights included a 0.3% second quarter Eurozone expansion, despite a contraction in Germany, the once locomotive of the regional economy. Headline July inflation was flat, which, given the base effect, saw the year-over-year creep up to 2.6% from 2.5%. At an annualized rate, Eurozone CPI rose 1.6% in the 3 months through to July. In August 2023, Eurozone CPI rose by 0.5%, making for an easy comparison. In the fourth quarter, 23, Eurozone CPI rose by an annualized clip of about 1.2%, making for a tougher comparison. Still, the market has little doubt that the ECB will cut rates in September, and there's another cut and a half discounted in the fourth quarter. The CAC 40 in France fell 1.61%, although I suspect most there were distracted watching other games. In Asia, Asian stocks fell sharply on Friday, tracking the overnight rout on Wall Street on concerns over slowing economic growth, with a rout in Japanese markets deepening after the Bank of Japan struck a hawkish chord this week. Irked additionally by the week's Bank of Japan rate rise and yen surge, Japanese markets were by far the worst performers across their Asian peers, with the Nikkei 225 index down nearly 5% to its weakest level since early February, and the broader TOPIX index shed 4.2%. Japanese stocks were already nursing sharp losses from Thursday after the BOJ struck an unexpectedly hawkish tone during its end of July meeting. The central bank hiked rates by 15 basis points and said it plans to raise rates further this year, presenting a clear end to the stimulative policies that boosted Japanese markets over the past year or so. Toyota Motor Corp., one of the biggest stocks on the Nikkei, fell 3.1% after its June quarter earnings slightly missed estimates, while automaker also flagged slowing demand. Broader Asian markets all retreated as risk appetite was battered by growing concerns over a global economic slowdown. Mixed technology earnings from the US also sparked an extended rout in the sector. South Korea's Kospi slid 3.3% on deep losses in heavyweight chipmakers following dismal earnings from Intel. And Taiwan chipmaker TSMC lost almost 6%. Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index fell 2.1% on losses in major Chinese internet stocks, and China, at the heart of the brewing global industrial slowdown after news that its factory sector contracted again in July, saw its stock market drop about 1%. The Shanghai Shenzhen CSI 300 and Shanghai Composite actually dropped 0.7% and 0.5% respectively, and that's their weakest level since the middle of February. Sentiment towards China remains weak following scant clues on stimulus from Beijing and a slew of weak PMI readings for July. India's Nifty 50 index fell 1.25% on Friday, with index seeing a heavy degree of profit-taking after notching a record high above 25,000 points just on Thursday. In Australia, the ASX 200 fell 2.1% on Friday. That's the worst one-day decline since March 2023, with the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank in the US then sparking fears of widespread bank runs throughout the world's largest economy. Futures points also to a further fall on Monday. The All Ords lost 2.1% to 8,170.4. What's particularly tricky for local investors is that we're heading into August's reporting season, where volatility is always more pronounced. It's a perfect storm. Volatility from local earnings, a recession panic from the US, persistent and growing fears about China's economy, and the yen carry trade unwinding. As a result, all 11 sectors of the Australian benchmark ended in the red. Uranium explorer Boss Resources was the biggest laggard on the main index, down nearly 13% at $3.18. Banks were among the worst hit as well, with Commonwealth Bank down 3%, National Australia Bank dropped nearly 4%, and Macquarie Group retreated 2.2% to $206.70 as it flagged a potential hybrid issue. The mining sector also came under pressure, with Rio Tinto starting 0.8% to $118.75. BHP was 1.2% down to $41.98, and Fortescue was 1.3% lower at $18.75. In the energy sector, Woodside shaved 1.9% to $27.48, and Santos shed 2.2% to $7.86, even as oil prices did recoup some lost ground but then fell away again. In the tech sector, Block was among the rare outperformers, up 5.1% at $100.10 after upgrading its full-year guidance and flagging a new $3 billion US share buyback. Financial software provider Iress lost 1.4% to $10.40 as it completed the sale of its UK mortgage sales business to Bain for $167 million. In other corporate news, sleep apnea device makers ResMed ended the session 1.8% lower, even as it posted higher revenue and dividends for the April to June quarter. But it was the recession-sensitive consumer discretionary that charted the worst day in the index, as growing fears of a recession in the US sent investors fleeing from retailers like Wesfarmers, JB Hi-Fi, and Harvey Norman, which all ended the session down around 3%. Discretionary retailers were the worst hit, falling 3% for the first time since December 2022. Wesfarmers fell 2.9% to $71.60, and Premier Investments dropped 2.2% to $32.35. Australian yields also lower. The two-year government bond declined 8 basis points to 3.711, while the 10-year declined to 3.986%. AMP's chief economist and head of investment strategy, Shane Oliver, said investors have switched from being concerned about inflation to worrying about growth. It's good news that central banks are heading towards rate cuts, but history tells us that rate cuts are good for shares if we avoid recession, Dr. Oliver said. Whereas if we go into recession, then you need lots of rate cuts before it's good for share markets. Following the Bank of Japan, the Fed, and the Bank of England decisions this week, the central bank torch will next be passed to the RBA, which announced its decision on Tuesday. At the last meeting, the bank kept its benchmark rate unchanged at 4.35%, but there was a discussion as to whether it should lift it by another 25 basis points due to inflation easing more slowly than previously expected. Even if the RBA sounds more dovish on Tuesday, it's unlikely to make a 180-degree spin and start communicating a rate cut. They may opt for a more neutral stance and signal that they want more evidence that inflation is back on the downward path. Something like that may disappoint market participants expecting hints about a potential rate cut, allowing the Aussie to recover some of its recently lost ground. The Aussie was last at 65.1 cents against the dollar and 50.85 cents against the pound. And finally, Bitcoin mining difficulty reached a historic peak following a recent increase of 10.5%, according to reports. In percentage terms, this rise is the 24th largest since 2016, the 73rd since 2012, and the 119th largest of all time. However, in absolute terms, this marks the largest difficulty increase ever recorded. The latest difficulty adjustment shows that competition among miners is on the rise as the Bitcoin network expands and becomes more complex after this year's halving. Higher mining difficulty usually means a tougher environment for miners, which can affect Bitcoin's overall network security and the efficiency of the mining operations. This could lead to higher operational costs for miners, which might influence the future dynamics of Bitcoin's price. Meanwhile, as of today, Bitcoin's price stands at $61,782. The big change in difficulty could have an impact on how stable Bitcoin's price is and how people on the market make their decisions. How the difficulty of mining affects the price of Bitcoin is not straightforward. On one hand, it could make mining more difficult, but on the other, it could signal the network is more secure, which might affect how investors feel about it and how the market moves. And actually, for me, this could be said also of the broader markets too. It's hard to read from here. The likelihood of more declines and rotations from big tech are there, at least until Nvidia's next update. While markets might now have swung too far towards recession fears, remember traders make money from volatility. A very interesting time heading into the next RBA meeting. And I continue to believe that markets will slide into September. Perhaps now the Fed put is back in play again. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.